Hello, and welcome to episode number 18 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I'm your host, Exoacademian. Not all that long ago, it seems, the notion that our world may actually be a simulation, a massively and masterly orchestrated virtual reality, seemed a notion best left to science fiction writers. In fact, the idea didn't even really gain traction until our own video game technology, rendered with high-definition graphics cards and powered by code bases that included full-on physics engines, grew to be so immersive and realistic that people began extrapolating outwards, wondering if, one day, perhaps a technologically advanced enough civilization could actually render an entire universe, one so all-encompassing that even the participants would be fooled into believing it was, quote-unquote, real. Believe it or not, today, this notion is taken very seriously by philosophers and physicists alike. And it's not just because we've been inspired by the remarkable increase in the reality and capacities of our own digital creations. No, even more central to the growth of this idea are hints that have been found, breadcrumbs found along the trail, if you will, by observations made on the quantum level of reality. The implications of these observations are truly mind-blowing. Indeed, these very revelations led world-renowned physicist Niels Bohr to famously say, quote, "If quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet," unquote. Ultimately, these astounding findings bring into question the very fabric of our reality. In modern plays on this notion of virtual reality, television shows like Westworld depict human beings entering into the simulation to tweak the inner workings of the AI-driven robots. Not surprisingly, many a UFO enthusiast has noticed how similar such scenes seem to be to the reported abductions of human beings by apparently alien intelligences, who likewise reportedly make alterations on their own subjects. And perhaps even more tellingly, many of these experiencers report, after the fact, feeling that the realm of the others, whether that be on board a supposed UFO craft or elsewhere, actually feels more real than our own everyday waking existence. Indeed, near-death experiencers report the very same kind of sentiment when comparing there to here. And beyond the issue of contact and/or abduction experiences, the very way these others, these evidently non-human intelligences, are able to apparently effortlessly violate our observed laws of physics while they make their rare appearances within our world, has led some to postulate that perhaps our world is a simulation and they, the architects. How is it that they seemingly pass through solid walls like passing through air, often taking us along with them? And how do they pilot craft that seem immune to the very effects of gravity itself, almost as if they're operating within bubbles of localized space-time? When you add to the mix the long-standing historical appearances of these others, who were often understood by pre-scientific societies to be, depending on the circumstance and the worldview, angels or demons and sometimes even gods, the very creators themselves, and the situation becomes even more, depending on your point of view, intriguing, inspiring, or disturbing. This confounding complexity leads us to pose some very large questions, such as, what is the reality status of our perceived universe? To what degree do these others exist in or beyond this universe? And what is truly central to existence itself? What role does matter, energy, and pure information play? And could it be that each of these are derivatives of capital C consciousness itself, the ultimate engine of parallel virtual universes? These truly mind-bending and potentially paradigm-crashing questions are the topic of this, the 18th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin today's podcast, I would just ask that you keep an open mind when it comes to this notion that we may live within a virtual reality. Let's begin by discussing Nick Bostrom's simulation hypothesis. He suggested that one of three possibilities must be the case. Number one, all human-like civilizations in the universe go extinct before they develop the technological capacity to create simulated realities. Number two, if any civilizations do reach this phase of technological maturity, none of them will bother to run simulations. Or three, advanced civilizations would have the ability to create many, many simulations, and that means there are far more simulated worlds than non-simulated ones. Now, as people began to grapple with Nick Bostrom's hypothesis, they thought, wait a second, what the numbers basically are telling us is it's much more likely we live in a simulated universe than a real one. Or so the argument goes. But let's step back for a moment and break this down piece by piece. Let's begin by talking about how we experience reality, how we experience what we think is real, what we assume is real. The truth is, how we experience reality depends on a rendering given to us by our body minds. And what do optical illusions demonstrate? They show us that our experience of reality is an interpretation, and that sometimes that interpretation is not at all accurate. And ironically, even objectively knowing this after the fact doesn't necessarily stop us from experiencing it the same way we did before knowing that. Why? Because our experience is part and parcel with the interpretation, period. Now, beyond these distortions of perception and interpretation, something else seems to be going on. Experience tells us that something seems to be cooked into reality, so to speak. And we experience this through a variety of phenomena, and I'd like to discuss a few of those. Number one is what people call synchronicity. This is when people experience a bizarre alignment of events that seem to be too coincidental to be chance. Next, we have the experience of déjà vu, like in the movie The Matrix, when the same black cat shows up twice. These are like bleed-throughs into our direct experience from something beyond the simulation. Next up, we have astrology. And this was particularly mind-blowing to me because I've never really looked into this because I assumed there was nothing to it. But apparently skeptics that have looked into this have found that there are times that astrology accurately depicts and predicts reality. And of course, this makes no sense in a materialist mechanistic model of the world. Let me give you an example. When people happen to be born at the same time that certain planets are aligned, they are more likely to grow up and share the same occupation when compared with a random slice of the population. Very bizarre, but documented as true. Finally, we have the Mandela effect, the notion that large groups of people reportedly share the same false memories about historical events that we have no current record ever occurred. How could this happen on a mass level that people would share the same false memory of something that apparently never occurred? Now, one could argue that these may be glitches in the matrix, giveaways perhaps that there is something beyond what we think of as reality. I'd also throw into the mix the notion of fractals. Now, for those of you not familiar, fractals are like these repeating patterns we see throughout nature. They're everywhere we look. When you really microscopically examine things, you see these patterns. And what's interesting is no matter how much you zoom in, that at different levels of magnification, these same fractals are noticed, these same repeating patterns over and over again. If you look at the X-ray of a lung and compare that to the branches of a tree, they look remarkably similar, almost like the same repeating pattern. And again, if you were making a computer simulation, you would use repeating patterns like this to save memory. Sounds strange, but we see them everywhere. Still not convinced? Let's carry on. And here is when the evidence gets really heavy. You remember earlier on, we talked about we have no experience of reality apart from our interpretation of it. Well, it goes much deeper than that, because the truth is, apparently, when you study reality at the quantum level, it suggests that reality, as we think about it, doesn't actually even exist beyond our experience of it. Does that sound like a bridge too far to you? Well, this is exactly what we were getting at when we quoted Niels Bohr, who said again, if quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet. Now, a lot of this comes down to the implications of the famous double slit experiment, which was initially run around 1914 or 1915, and has been run thousands of times since then. Now we use much more sophisticated equipment, such as lasers, but the same truth, the same result, bears out time and time again. When we have uncertainty in outcomes, what we find is that we can't know whether something is a particle or a wave. All we have are probability distributions, which again sounds a lot more like code that is waiting to execute. And what causes the code to execute, you might ask? Well, it's consciousness observing what we call reality. When we look, when we take a measurement, that's when the code executes and that probability distribution resolves into one thing or another. That's when we have a collapse of the wave function, as it's called. Bizarre, but true. Again, if you don't know about this, I highly recommend you look into it. The implications for reality are profound. Now, a little bit more about my background here and how I relate to this. In addition to having an interest in and having studied at the academic level things like philosophy, consciousness, psychology, religious studies, my background is also in software engineering. So I understand how this works from an engineering point of view when you create these kinds of programs. You don't actually execute code unless you have to, because that saves memory. Again, like we discussed before. And this double slit experiment, which tells us about reality at its foundational level, seems to be showing us this very thing. As I said, these results were initially found in the early 20th century, and we've really spent the next 100 years coming to grips with the implications of this in terms of our model of reality. The truth is, even today, many scientists still don't want to deal with this directly. They either call it weird science, meaning it will ultimately be proven false or incomplete, although that's a faith statement, there's no logic suggesting that should be the case, or they say something dismissive like it only works on a micro scale, which again doesn't have a lot of logical coherence to it. Those who do take it seriously, and there are more and more people in this camp, end up with a conclusion very similar to the simulation hypothesis we discussed earlier. This notion that our reality may actually be virtual, that we may be within a simulation, has gained a lot of credibility over the last 20 years, and even more specifically over the last decade. And not just because of scientific findings, although that is the primary driver, but also because our imaginations can go there. As a result of what we've seen with video games, we've seen simulated realities, digital realities, that have become increasingly all-encompassing and convincing. And we now are at the point where we can imagine that eventually you would get to the point that you could render something so realistic that participants couldn't tell the difference. Earlier on, we discussed the television show Westworld, which deals with this virtual reality notion. Devs is another series that was on recently that really pursues this idea to the nth degree. And basically the notion is, it's all about big data. If you have enough data, then you can render anything. You can be so all-encompassing, so complete, that the participants would have no way of recognizing the difference between a real reality and a simulated one. Now again, you may find this a bridge too far. You may think that is unrealistic, but you have to reckon with these findings from the double slit experiment and other experiments run on quantum reality. They tell us this is the case. They are hinting at a a reality that is simulated, that only renders when consciousness interacts with it. Okay, so I think we've sufficiently set the table. I'd like to now move on to the figure of Tom Campbell. If you're not familiar with Tom Campbell, he's someone who began as a very left-brained individual. He was a physicist, and again, if you don't know, physicists' primary job is to model reality, to tell us how reality actually works. What's fascinating about Tom Campbell is that he approaches out-of-body experiences as a scientist. He has them, and he uses them to run experiments. He enters those states and then plays with variables to test various hypotheses about ultimate reality, reality beyond the simulation that we live within in our waking world. As a result, he's been able to fine-tune his understanding of ultimate reality over time. Now, Tom Campbell's journey into these particular topics began when he volunteered to be a scientist who would help Bob Monroe run experiments on out-of-body experiences. Now, for those of you not familiar, Bob Monroe became widely known as a pioneering explorer of human consciousness and out-of-body experiences. His well-documented and thorough research, beginning in the 1950s, produced evidence that specific audio patterns have predictable beneficial effects on human capabilities, not only in terms of aiding endeavors such as achieving a good night's sleep, but also for evoking expanded states of consciousness. Now, initially, Tom Campbell's role was that of an objective researcher. He would set up the experiments to try and help Bob Monroe demonstrate objectively that out-of-body experiences were real and not just a figment of his imagination. But eventually, Campbell became an active participant when he became aware that he was very good at having these out-of-body experiences. To make a long story short, what Campbell ultimately found, after testing various hypotheses by adjusting variables, as I discussed earlier, is that we are more like avatars within a virtual reality. We are like the characters in a video game. And what or who is ultimately playing these roles is our non-local consciousness, which, said another way, is the consciousness that exists outside the simulation. And of course, for those of you who have been tuning in to the Point of Convergence podcast for a while now, this starts to sound very familiar. It sounds a lot like Rudy Shield and Edgar Mitchell's work regarding the quantum hologram. And like Rudy Shield and Edgar Mitchell, Tom Campbell came to see our universe as foundationally informational, not material, as scientific materialism would have you believe. He also postulates that this notion, this different framing of reality as virtual, helps explain questions across a variety of domains, including physics, which again is the modeling of reality, philosophy regarding the meaning of reality, and psychology. In other words, how does consciousness and behavior work? Now, it's interesting when you hear Tom Campbell speak because he still talks like a physicist. He talks in left-brain terms, even though he's talking about very spiritual, energetic topics. He says the goal of the system which creates the virtual reality is to reduce entropy, which you can think of as randomization, while increasing harmony. Ego, which stems from fear, according to Campbell, increases entropy, whereas love, the opposite of fear, or what remains when all fear is removed, reduces entropy, and this is the goal of the system. Now, leaving aside for a moment the question of who is this system? What is this system that causes the simulation? Is it God? Is it another alien civilization? Is it the life force or something else? We can see how this might work, that repeated lifetimes, reincarnation, are like iterations of a simulation, and that we, consciousness, are put into these roles. We play these avatars for a period of time, 80 to 100 years, sometimes less, so that we run into resistance and learn lessons and change. We reduce our own entropy, meaning we become more loving, peaceful, cooperative people, and the entire system learns and self-updates because of this. This is the self-discovering, auto-correcting cosmos we've talked about before. Now, according to Campbell's hypothesis, which again, he says he's tested and found to be accurate, there's different ways of looking at self-identity. We have some degree of identity in this particular iteration, this lifetime. We also are a unit of consciousness within the totality outside of the simulation. That's our non-local consciousness. And then there is the entire system that is not separate. Again, separation is ultimately an illusion, just like Buddhism would teach you. We are the oneness behind the simulation ultimately, whether you call us the creation of God that is part of the simulation or an extension of God, him or herself, itself. That's what's happening. There's different levels of identity that even when we go on to different iterations, different lifetimes, the cosmic database, you could call it, still contains all of the information, thoughts, feelings, events from every person's life, every iteration of a person. And all that information is kept. It's never lost. But we go on into new iterations to continue to learn so the entire system can self-update. And that's Campbell's hypothesis in a nutshell, how he looks at the simulation hypothesis. He believes we are living in a simulation, but that we have consciousness that ultimately originates outside the simulation. But then we're left with the question, how does this apply to the phenomenon? Well, first off, many experiencers report being told about a larger reality that remarkably resembles that which Tom Campbell describes from his own experiments. Those of you who've been tuning in throughout the podcast episodes will remember experiencers talking about previous lifetimes and learning about that in a kind of life review on board a UFO craft, apparently, in the same way that one learns about this in a near-death experience or sometimes an out-of-body experience like what Tom Campbell has described. You might also recall that many of these experiencers, whether they are contact experiencers or near-death experiencers, you'll remember that they often describe the reality they go to, the realm they go to in these different states of consciousness as feeling more real, more substantial than our everyday waking world. And one might expect this is exactly what you would find if you were able to exit the simulation, even for a period of time. Now, in the introduction to today's episode, we also discussed how the others can seemingly pass through solid walls effortlessly, and they can take us with them. How is this accomplished? Now, when we bang our heads against the wall, it hurts. Therefore, we assume that wall is real. Our experience of its solidity, communicated through our pain, tells us so. But science tells us the chair or the wall that we're banging our head against is mostly empty space. That really it's the shared vibration or a field of coherence of its loosely aligned component parts that make it appear real to us, both in terms of touch and vision. But even that notion only gets us part of the way to the truth. Really, this is even a misunderstanding. The truth is that, apart from our perception of it, the chair or the wall has no reality whatsoever. Like the young savant tells Neo in The Matrix, quote, "Do not try and bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth. There is no spoon. Then you'll see that it is not the spoon that bends. It is only yourself," unquote. Now, as we've discussed in other podcast episodes, when people are in the realm of the others, when they are interacting with non-human intelligence, they become aware of an aspect of themselves that goes beyond the current iteration. They experience their more complete reality beyond the simulation. And they come to remember, in fact, that they volunteered for this iteration, even if it feels difficult in the moment when they are immersed in it. Yes, the truth is, just like a good weight training program, resistance is key to progress. That's why we volunteer to go into this lifetime, incarnate into a human body, to learn and grow. Just like those who are really serious about learning a new language have found, immersion is always the fastest, surest way to master a language. The same works for evolution of consciousness. If it didn't feel real, it wouldn't play the role of providing resistance the way we need it to. That's what this simulation is all about. Now, in terms of addressing the question we put aside earlier, in terms of who is ultimately responsible for the simulation that we exist within, I see at least three options. Number one, we are part of a simulation run by an alien intelligence, that is, a more sophisticated civilization. Number two is, we just find that reality works this way. Reality is primarily about information, full stop. Therefore, the cosmic intelligence, or God, if you will, connecting all of the universes within the multiverse, simply designed the creation to work this way, to create an ever-evolving, ever more conscious and cooperative totality. And in that sense, the various universes within the multiverse would be different iterations of the simulation. I also think there's a third option, although I find not many people consider this, but I find it particularly intriguing. It's also possible in my mind that higher intelligences, that is, alien civilizations more sophisticated than us, both technologically and in terms of understanding consciousness, have acted as agents of the creative source, i.e. the cosmic intelligence or God, and they have created us. Ultimately, in my mind, that doesn't make us any less real. And remember, ultimately, we are oneness with everything else. So after being presented with this evidence today, what do you think? Do you think it's possible we are living in a simulation? Do you think it's possible we are within a virtual reality, that our actual consciousness is non-local, and that what we experience here in our everyday lives is just an avatar, a character in a kind of video game that is here to learn both as an individual and then contribute that learning to the totality? Intriguing questions. But if it is true that this is a simulation, but a meaningful one, the question becomes, how will you live differently? That's a question I ask myself after being presented with this information. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, let's keep this conversation going and growing. Please continue to spread the word. Tell your friends about this show if you think they'd be interested and you found it interesting. Please spread the word on social media. Leave a comment if you're watching on YouTube. I always appreciate seeing those. And perhaps leave a review if you are enjoying this podcast and are consuming it on a podcast platform. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.